जय राम। सॉरी, जय राम राव पंजाबी हरे। जय राम राव पंजाबी हरे। गप्पे चंदा पल्ला इवर रे। गप्पे चंदा पल्ला इवर रे। यशरनंदन रस चंदनंदन यशरनंदन रस चंदनंदन यमुना तेरा वंदचरे। यमुना तेरा वंदचरे। गया कंडारिया रे। गप्पे चंदा पल्ला इवर रे। गप्पे चंदा पल्ला इवर रे। यशरनंदन वच चंदरंदन यशरनंदन वच चंदरंदन यमुना तेरा वंदचरे। यमुना तेरा वंदचरे। जय राम राव पंजाबी हरे। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे। हरे राम நம்ம நம்ம Krishna, 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 le re, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, le re. Krishna, 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 le re, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya pava para Jai Gaura Pimanandi Srila Prabhupada ki Kanta Chimad Bhagavatam ki Samavita Bhaktavinda ki Gaura Pimanandi Om Agyanti Mandasya Agyananjala Shalakaya Chakshun Malitam Dina Tasmai Shri Guvi Namah Shri Chaitanya Manupastam Stavidam Yenavutale Swayam Rupakadam Ayam Dhanati Swabhanatikam Namam Vishnabhara Krishnabhasta Vuttali Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sasvati Deve Govani Pachayine Nivishesha Shunyavari Pashtatari Shatarine Vanchakoppa Tuvasa Kripasinubevacha Paditta Nampava Nebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Bhava Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasadi Go Bhaktabinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I'm sitting here for my own purification, and thank you for coming and encouraging me a little bit. And I first of all want to humbly request the blessings, especially of all the senior devotees, disciples of Srila Prabhupada, and that I may say something of some little value and inspiration. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Canto 9, Chapter 10, Verse 29. Shri Sukha Uvacha Svanam Vibhishanaschakre Svanam Vibhishanaschakre Kushalendra Numoditaha Kushalendra Numoditaha Pitri Medavidanena Pitri Medavidanena Yaduktam Samparayikam Yaduktam Samparayikam Shri Sukha Uvacha Svanam Vibhishanaschakre Kushalendra Numoditaha Pitri Medavidanena Yaduktam Samparayikam Anybody else? Ladies. Shri Sukha Uvacha, Shri Sukadev Goswami said, Svanam, of his own family members, Vibhishana, Vibhishana, the brother of Ravana, and devotee of Lord Ramchandra, Chakre, executed. Kushala Indra anumodita, approved by the king of Kosala, Lord Ramchandra, Pitrimera Vidanina, by the funeral ceremony performed by the son after the death of his father or some family member. Yat uktam, which have been prescribed. Samparayikam, duties to be performed after a person's death to save him from the path to hell. Translation. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Vibhishana, the pious brother of Ravana and devotee of Lord Ramchandra, received approval from Lord Ramchandra, the king of Kosala. Then he performed the prescribed funeral ceremonies for his family members to save them from the path to hell. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. After giving up the body, one is transferred to another body. But sometimes, if one is too sinful, he is checked from transmigrating to another body, and thus he becomes a ghost. To save a diseased person from ghostly life, the funeral ceremony or shraddha ceremony, as prescribed in authorized shastra, must be performed. Ravana was killed by Lord Ramchandra and was destined for hellish life. But by Lord Ramchandra's advice, Vibhishana, Ravana's brother, performed all the duties prescribed in relation to the dead. Thus, Lord Ramchandra was kind to Ravana even after Ravana's death. So, I'd like to just briefly touch upon a couple of topics related to the verse and the purport, but the main theme I want to keep to the end, because it's not directly related to the verse and purport, but very well to the whole Leela. So, gradually, you know, the descriptions of Lord Ramchandra's pastimes, they're gradually winding up, they're gradually coming to an end, to a happy end. People like to hear stories which end with a happy end. And of course, it is the eternal theme of the battle between the envy, the evil, the tragic selfishness on one hand, and then the divine, the heroic selflessness on the other hand. So that actually accompanies us through the whole Bhagavatam, through our own life. That's the internal battle we are all facing. And yes, by Krishna's mercy, the divine is victorious. And interestingly, Krishna's leelas, as a rule, they're somewhat more superhuman, whereas Ram's leelas, they're, so to speak, more human-like. And I guess that's why people actually find it easier to identify, they get more emotionally involved with this leela, and that's, I guess, why, at least in the Hindu parts of the world, Ramchandra's leelas are much more known and much more cherished and liked, basically. I remember many years ago I was preaching in Nepal, and there was Ramayana going on the TV. Sunday mornings was impossible to have a morning program. Everybody was just running, you know, to the room where the TV was, and everybody was glued to the screen watching Ramayana. No Bhagavatam class. So this is the situation. This is how popular this leela is, and how eager people are to hear and cherish it and so on, because yeah, people are more emotionally involved and they can more easily identify with it. So now here in our verse and purport, Prabhupada, first of all, he is quickly, briefly referring to the ghostly life. So yes, if a person is too sinful, or also if a person commits suicide, then usually the destiny is that at least for some time we are not awarded another human body. Basically, it's the punishment for not really valuing the body we had been given, and therefore for some time the soul has to hover around in a ghostly body, which means the subtle body is still there, mind, intelligence, false ego, and that's where all the desires are actually happening. The desires are taking place on the subtle body of the mind, basically. So being in a ghostly existence is actually quite a torturous situation, because there's so many urges and desires there, the living entity experiences, but there is no body there to fulfill them. So this is a very torturous and suffering condition, actually. And that's why ghosts like to try and enter another person's body whose mind is weaker, and then through that body fulfill his or her needs or its needs or whatever. Yeah, so that's the situation. So very, very uncomfortable and actually hellish existence. And Prabhupada, in one purport, he actually explains that devotees who take Krishna prasad, they are very unlikely to meet such a kind of destiny. And that's why today, you know, at least within ISKCON, we are not putting much emphasis on the Shraddha ceremony or something. This is actually more like a Hindu custom. And if we take prasadam, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't need the Shraddha ceremony to save us from this hellish existence of being in a ghostly existence. And usually we chant the holy name when somebody leaves his body, and we distribute prasadam, and that brings all auspiciousness. Apart from the fact that if a person practices Krishna consciousness, we purify so many generations backwards and forwards anyway. So many generations within our families, they get the benefit. So therefore, actually no real need. It's not really emphasized in our spiritual practice these days. And yes, as Prabhupada says, after giving up the body, one is transferred to another body. So briefly touching upon the topic of death, we have been churning it in our seminar meeting, Death with Joy. It is actually a very intriguing topic, because it's 100% sure that each and every one of us here has to meet this challenge one day, this final test. Yet we are actually rather in denial about this. We are very expert to simply blend this topic out and not confront ourselves with it. And usually we are very fearful, actually. Fear is always a sign of ignorance, actually. Whenever we are ignorant, then we are fearful. But if we actually more deeply understand what is going on there, then that does reduce our fear of death. And of course, definitely as our relationship with the Lord is more tangibly established, it is becoming more tangible reality of our life, that also takes away our fear of death. So interesting to see a devotee, a non-devotee, has completely different attitude to death, completely different. Non-devotee, For Nandavodi, it's the most horrifying, the most ghastly moment of life. You know, even Kamsa was obsessed of this fear of death. When will he come and kill me? When? So yeah, that's how a non-devotee faces death. Attitude of a non-devotee is like that. But devotee, actually, you know, as I'm saying, as our relationship is more tangibly established, then death becomes that most glorious, most joyful moment when we finally can get out of here. We can finally step on the plane back home, back to Godhead. So completely different attitude, completely different. And yes, I mean, we can understand death to be like a mysterious transformation where the soul simply on the subtle body moves to the next existence. And depending on the composition of the subtle body, that determines our next future. And to go back home, back to Godhead, subtle body of mind, intelligence, false ego, has to be completely spiritualized, completely transformed. All material aspects have to be dissolved and deleted, basically, and replaced with spiritual experiences and spiritual desires and spiritual aspirations and thoughts. So that requires quite a bit of work. It cannot be done just, when death comes, I will just remember Krishna and I will go back home, back to Godhead. Not such a cheap thing. It requires quite a bit of internal work. And interestingly, not only the attachments have to be given up and worked through, but also the aversions too, or the dislikes. Yes, we often don't realize, we only focus on the attachments, but the aversions, they are also material aspects in the mind. They occupy some place there. And even they also have to be worked through and given up, because as we always say, attachment and aversion, they're actually the two sides of the same coin. So if we are very much averse to something, well, there's also underlying some kind of attachment to it. So we can just, you know, look within our own hearts, how many aversions and dislikes we also carry around, you know? And if we are not working through those, well, of course, there's always the element of, you know, Prabhupada's, Krishna's, Guru's causeless mercy, but we can't really rely on this. We have to try, you know, as much as possible to really do that work and actually dissolve all these material elements which are there in the subtle body, and only then actually we can leave this world. So we can understand this experience of death. It's like the final test, the final exam. Which relationship is most dear to us in this world? As we know, Krishna says, 8.5, antakale chamamivasma and mukta kaleva. So, if you remember me alone, then you surely reach my abode. Of this there is no doubt. So, Krishna says, me alone. He doesn't say, me and my husband, wife, children, grandchildren, cat, dog, whatever. No, but it's Krishna alone. So that's not so easy. Yeah, that requires quite a bit of preparation. And I guess that's why this Vanaprastha ashram is actually such an important ashram, because that's where we are meant to really work on this, to give up the family attachments and extricate ourselves a little and give up all kinds of desires and really one more time more deeply absorb ourselves in Krishna consciousness. Very important ashram, this Vanaprastha ashram. But somehow there's not that much talk about it. It hasn't really been properly established actually yet. And I mean, it's not so surprising because our ISKCON society is still rather young, it's only 50 years old. So obviously it takes all some time until we are actually really applying our philosophy in practical life, and then we will get all these cultural aspects there which really immensely support our journey back home, back to Gallad. Yes, and then another very brief little mentioning how Prabhupada says in the last sentence, thus Lord Ramchandra was kind to Ravana even after Ravana's death. Yes, so this is the quality of the Lord. He is kind to everyone, not only to the devotees, but ultimately also to the demons. And of course we know Ravana was Jai Vijay previously, as we briefly mentioned in the yesterday's class. So this was the second birth, Ravana and Kumbhakarna, of Jai and Vijay. So ultimately they are devotees. And I came across a reference yesterday that it was described that, yes, Ravana, actually, when he was killed by Ram, he was strongly meditating on the Lord. Yes, he was, because he was actually a devotee. So, but nevertheless, the Lord is kind to one and all. He is equal to all. He actually is always acting and desiring for everybody's benefit, ultimate benefit of upliftment. Is beyond the platform of friends and enemies. So therefore, he is ordering Vibhishana, so you do the shraddha ceremony and save him from hellish existence. And of course also a devotee is also meant to take up this mood of actually being kind to everybody, even those who oppose us, because that spiritual vision gives us that understanding. Actually, there is a all beautiful, pure spirit soul there, but just temporarily the soul is covered by so many desires and not so nice qualities. So once we have that spiritual vision, we can look through the externals, we can have that vision of seeing a person in a spiritually diseased condition. And when a person is diseased, that doesn't give us a reason to reject that person or behave inimically to a person. No, we are kind. And we simply think, how can we act for that person's upliftment and ultimate benefit? And of course, Srila Prabhupada was the perfect example for this. Prabhupada knew how to connect with each and every living entity for their ultimate benefit. So this is this kindness here. And Prahlad Maharaj comes to mind also. When I read this, I was immediately thinking of Prahlad Maharaj when he was offered a benediction by the Lord. He said, oh, all I want is just that my father will be excused for his demoniac behavior. I mean, my God, how much more kind can one be, you know? There's no trace of revenge or anything like this. But if we imagine ourselves in that position, we probably would act differently. We would wish that person all kinds of nasty things and get back at that person in that way. But no, pure devotee or the Lord himself, they are beyond this platform of friends and enemy. And there is a nice verse in First Canto, 18th chapter, verse 48, where it says, the devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they are never inclined to avenge themselves. Wow. Yes. That's actually the mood of a pure devotee. You know, it doesn't matter how he is treated, he's never inclined to avenge themselves. I mean, that's the ultimate tolerance. That kind of tolerance is only possible if one actually is firmly established in one's relationship with Krishna, and one can take shelter there. And then it doesn't matter what happens around us, it is just part of the nonsensical stage performance of material life, how Prabhupada calls it, you know, nonsensical stage performance. This is really what material life is all about. So only if that relationship with the Lord is more firmly established, then we can take shelter there, and then we don't take all these things so seriously which might come our way, and we can still have that spiritual attitude and vision that we can actually be kind even to our opponents and so-called enemies. So now, looking back at the whole Leela which we have been discussing over quite some time. Hare Krishna. So looking back at the whole Leela, one point that actually really I find very striking, that's the point that actually this whole episode came about through Kaikeyi's maidservant, right? Mantara, I don't know how you pronounce it correctly. Yes, she was such an insignificant person, actually. You know, she was an ugly, hunchbacked maidservant. And she planted that seed of that ugly, envious talk. You know, she's started getting into Kaikeyi's ears that actually, no, Ram shouldn't be coronated, Bharata should be on the throne, and. My God, I mean, I find this very striking, you know, from a not very influential woman. That just shows the power of women, actually. From her starts this whole thing, which then one thing leads to another, and. But she is the root of it all, actually. And we can see her as personification of Pujalpa. Yes. That's how I like to see the situation. And this envious Pujalpa, that opens the door to the Ravana mentality. Yes. I find this very, very striking. You know, even the fact that Kaikeyi became victim of this, that shows how poisonous and contaminating this envious talk is, this Pujalpa. It ruins everything. It destroys everything. It brings so much, you know, suffering and havoc and misfortune. My God. Yes. So I'd really like to, you know, spend the rest of the class more talking about this. You know, that this envious Pujalpa, that brings in all kinds of demoniac tendencies. And as Prabhupada always warned us, the real danger comes from within ISKCON, not from outside. It comes from within. The dangers from outside, they usually are opportunities to preach. They actually usually unite the devotees and for preaching. But what is the biggest danger is this envious talk from within our society. Yes. And for me, that's really one of the main lessons I'm taking from this whole Leela. Yes. Our main obstacles, our main dangers comes from within our society and also, of course, from within our hearts. Right? So in the book Bhakti Loka by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives a whole list of all kinds of pujalpas. And interestingly, when we look a little deeper, actually the source, the root cause of most of them is pride and envy. And this is really what this maidservant is embodying, at least for me. Yes. So let us have a quick look here. The first kind of prajalpa from Bhaktyaloka is useless talk. So, I mean, all right, maybe in that form, that's probably the mildest one out of all forms of prajalpa. There may be, it is not so much based on pride and envy, but at least on some kind of subtle sense gratification, just to engage in useless talk. But then the next one already, next form of prajalpa is arguments, just arguing. So that already involves the false ego. We want to be right. And the, you know, the, then there is envy and pride involved, and we just engage in some useless arguments. Right? Already more contaminating, I would say, than the useless talk, because there's more envy and pride involved. If we would be all Trinada Bhisuni Trina, then there would be very little chance for arguments. Right? So then the next one, gossip. Oh my God. So now, you know, it gets more contaminating. And in this regard to gossip, there's also a nice little pastime I remember reading in Koma Prabhu's book about Prabhupada in Australia, where Prabhupada's disciple Upendra, he was cooking lunch for Prabhupada, and just some devotees came from India. They came back from India to Australia. So, and usually, as it goes, we ask, oh, how are you? How was it in India? This, that. And then the whole discussion ended in all kinds of talk about devotees. Oh, yeah, did you hear this person has done that, and this person has done that, this, and. So then Prabhupada hears it from the next room. And he is blasting Upendra. You know, he's calling him in his room. What are you doing? And Upendra says, talking to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada asks, gossiping? And Upendra answers, is talking about other devotees gossiping, Srila Prabhupada? And Prabhupada says, yes. This devotee, that devotee, time is short. Why do you waste, a life is short. Why do you waste your time in useless talk? When two devotees meet, they are meant to discuss Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, not this devotee, that devotee. And then Prabhupada makes his comment. He says, this gossip will destroy our movement. Yes, that's what he says. This gossip will destroy our movement. My God, heavy, heavy. You know? Yes. Because it is so contaminating. Yes. And usually there's envy there as a root, because we talk about people in a subtle way. We want to reduce their position and establish our superior position. That's in most cases of this gossip talk, that's behind it. So there is actually subtle envy behind it. And by talking like that, it's just, even if there is a fault there, but talking about other people's faults, which I guess comes later in fault finding, yeah, it only magnifies negativity. It is not beneficial for anybody who hears it. It only magnifies negativity. So this gossip, talking about this happened, that person happened, it's a useless waste of time. Useless. And then, interestingly, next form of gossip is debates. So even this debating, very often this goes on over internet. You know, this is highly contaminating, actually, because people who are caught up in this debating, there is no humble, submissive way of hearing, trying to find out the truth, but we simply want to push through our opinion. And very often when one person says something, you know, then the other person twists it around, makes it into a weapon, shoots it back at the person, and like that it's going back and forwards, back and forwards. You know, highly contaminating, because it is again based on pride and envy, just trying to establish I am right, everybody else is wrong. So devotees should not take part in these things. It is not uplifting for anybody. And I mean, anybody here who has ever been involved in such kind of debates, you can feel it. It really gives an ugly feeling in the heart. We get all agitated and angry, and the mind is disturbed, and so that's the effect, that's the contaminating effect of this tendency to debate. And then fault finding, you know, highly contaminating. Again, envy and pride is the root cause. Trying to reduce other person's position by establishing our superior position. Oh, you know, this person is wrong here and that, and finding faults. You know, another form of prajalpa. And then speaking falsehoods. Yeah, I guess fault finding, speaking falsehoods. That's what the maid servant was engaging. You know, she created this whole thing there that, oh, Ram would be, you know, probably killed and this and that. Bharata would be killed. Her son would be killed if Ram would be put on the throne. So all kinds of falsehoods she was creating there, right? Fake news. Even in the outside world, big problem. All these fake news, you know, circulating in the whole world, creating all kinds of crazy situations. Yes. And then blaspheming devotees. Again, you know, root cause pride, envy, worldly talk. Yeah, so these are all the forms of prajalpa, which are so contaminating and actually destroy our movement, as Prabhupada was saying. So we have to be very careful, very, very careful that we don't participate in this. And I guess that's why we actually have Vaishnav etiquette. Vaishnav etiquette is our saving grace, but unfortunately, so often we don't follow it. So the Vaishnav etiquette actually says that one should not get involved in any kinds of disagreements which are happening on higher levels. We should not get involved. We should not discuss even. We should not take sides. Because guaranteed, we misjudge. Because on a junior level, we cannot see what is taking place on a higher level. We cannot understand. We cannot judge. But how often do we do this? You know, that we discuss and pass judgments on situations or personalities who are above us, who are senior. So this is actually the etiquette. We should not get involved. It is not our business. It's out of our circle of influence. And of course, Facebook, social, you know, networks, oh, they're the tool to just create, you know, all this prajalpa all around the world. Yes. And it's constantly going on. And that is such a contaminating element in our society. There's also this nice little story with Prabhupada when the new technology was the telex machine, right? That was even before the fax, was the telex. I mean, now it's completely outdated and nobody, even fax machines are hardly even used anymore. But so there was the telex machine. And the devotees somewhere in America, they had a telex machine and they were showing Prabhupada, oh, look, Srila Prabhupada, we have this telex machine and instantly we can communicate all over the world. And they were showing Prabhupada And then the suggestion came to Prabhupada, or maybe every temple should have such a telex machine. You know, but what was Prabhupada's answer? No, no. Then you will not only gossip locally, but all over the world. You know, that was his comment. Yes. And sometimes I can't help myself. I'm thinking, you know, what would Prabhupada say about all these modern technologies and social medias? Of course, I know they have all some little benefit is there. But really, the negative aspect is by far outweighing the tiny little benefit. Yeah, definitely, definitely, yes, yes. So, I mean, as a devotee, we have to be very, very cautious that we stay away, that we learn, you know, this lesson from this wonderful Leela with Lord Ramchandra, that we are not following in the footsteps of this ugly, hunchbacked, maidservant there, you know, talking, fish, fish, they say in Bengali, you know, fish, 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 you know, whispering, talking nonsense, you know, fish, fish, you know, so that we don't go along that path and simply create havoc and open the door to the Ravana mentality. That's what happens. Okay, so I leave a few minutes for questions or comments or corrections or whatever you would like to offer. Yes, Prabhu.
Madhuri, I wanted to ask to Shraddh ceremony.
What would you like to ask?
Shraddh ceremony.
Shraddha.
Yeah. Just like here in Srila Prabhupada writes that it must be performed. And we see in our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition that Advaita Prabhu also performed. So sometimes there are conflicting views about this, that because it is also a form of devotional service when we offer bhoga to the Lord Krishna and then invite Vaishnavas. So,
well, I mean, I have to admit I'm not expert in the ins and outs of Shraddha ceremony. You know, I was looking a little bit and I couldn't even find such detailed descriptions on it. But, I mean, you're saying offering bhoga to the Lord and distributing prasadam, of course we are doing that. Of course we are doing that. But as far as I understand, Shraddha ceremony is much more than that.
No, ancestors, not. That's just a part of the ceremony. I'm just talking about,
yes,
wanting to clarify about the need of performing this Shraddha ceremony by devotees in general.
Yes. I mean, as far as my humble understanding of this topic is, that, you know, Advaita Acharya or even Mahaprabhu, they were performing that because that was the firm tradition at that time. You know, so they didn't want to be controversial or something by not performing it. But, you know, in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, there is no real need, you know, there's no real need as long as I understand, because, you know, our forefathers, they're already getting so much benefit. If we become a pure devotee, 12 generations forwards and backwards are liberated, that their start back home, back to Godhead is there, you know. Sorry.
But I think Advaita Prabhu actually broke the tradition by inviting Haridas Thakur. He invited a controversy.
Yes.
So I don't think.
Yes, because that tradition was going, so he didn't want to just not follow the tradition. So he followed it, but then he did that radical thing of inviting Haridas Thakur, a born Muslim. You know? But I have. I mean, I didn't take note of it, but there is, if you Google Shraddha ceremony on the folio, you will get so many references. And there is instructions where Prabhupada says, actually, for a devotee, not necessary.
Yeah, actually, I tried searching it, and we received both kind of, some places Prabhupada write, it must be performed. Some places it's right, one who's a pure devotee need not perform.
So, but so as you, a, as you a, can take your pick.
But as a practicing devotee, I mean, that's all.
Okay. So, as you like. Yes, you have something to add to this? Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Just that driving force in Advaitacharya's situation should be the driving force in many things we do, Shraddha ceremony included, that if it eases the relationship with the family, if it's the custom in the family, if it's going to cause disturbance or even enmity towards Krishna consciousness because you don't do it, do it.
Very
There's no
true.
Harm in doing it.
Exactly,
but
yes.
But as a standard for ISKCON in the West where it's not, no one even knows Shraddha, what's that? So then it's not necessary. That's
yes.
what Prabhupada was
yes.
saying.
Yes, yes, very good. Thank you so much. Yes, exactly. I mean, in Bangladesh, I spend a lot of time in Bangladesh, they also, devotees are doing it. You know, so they even did it for my father. When my father passed away, they knew him. He had come 2 times with me to Bangladesh. They did a whole thing there in Dhaka for him. You know? So, all right, fine, let them do it. Great. No harm. You know, but it doesn't mean that all those who are not doing it, oh, they're not following Prabhupada's instruction, or they're offenders or something. You know? Yeah. Yeah, that's a good conclusion. Thank you. Anything else?
Yes. I have a question.
Yes, okay, you've got the mic.
You made one statement in your lecture that I was curious about. You said that Vanaprastha has not yet been established, presumably in ISKCON is what you were meaning. So I'm just curious, in brief, because it's probably a big topic, what exactly do you mean? An elaboration, and what would be your idea of that establishment?
Ooh, I've got a 15-hour course on this topic, which today we have the last day of it. Yes, I mean, but it's on my website. Yes, and eventually I'm planning to also publish it as a book, because I really feel that, we need education and training. So there is internal aspects, how we cultivate the Vanaprastha mood, and yes, it's just that Prabhupada, throughout the Bhagavatam, so many heavy statements at the time of 50, you know, one should move on, one should simplify one's life, simplify one's externals, especially for the ladies, simplifying our externals and simplifying our diet. And, you know, there's so many variations how it can manifest. But yeah, there's a few rare devotees, rare souls who are living this ashram. But the majority of devotees, I mean, I have a little bit of experience because I'm giving these courses, you know. And like last year in the ILS, I had a presentation on the Vanaprastha ashram. People were fearful to come. They were sharing with me. They asked me, "Oh, Mataji, what are you talking about? Vanaprastha ashram? Oh, really? Oh, no, I'm not coming." I said, "Why not?" "Oh, no, I don't want to hear about it. Too fearful." Yes. Yes. And once I had a whole program there. Every year I do this annual program of my little Institute for Spiritual Culture. 3 years ago, it was the Vanaprastha ashram, and I invite all kinds of personalities to speak, and I'm like the MC there. So, and I met a Prabhupada disciple who introduced me to his friend, also a Prabhupada disciple, and his wife was there too. And he introduced me, and he said, "Oh, Devaki Mataji gives interesting seminars." And I had these pamphlets advertising this Vanaprastha program. So I gave him one, "Come to our Vanaprastha program." And his wife snatched the paper out of his hand. "Don't you give him crazy ideas." She was angry. Yes, yes. Oh my God, I couldn't believe it. You know, yes, yes. People have all kinds of misconceptions. Many ladies think husband just puts on saffron and walks out overnight and that's the Vanaprastha ashram or something. But no, that's irresponsibility in the name of renunciation. So that there has not been proper training there. And therefore, it has not really manifest. And apart from that, the main contribution the Vanaprasthas give is to give guidance, to share their life experience, to give shelter. And this giving and accepting shelter, this need for mentorship, this is also a topic which has not been properly recognized. You know, I've got our 15-hour course on that. Yes. And unless we don't really understand how important it is to have a mentor and how important it is to one day become a mentor and selflessly reach out to others, sacrifice our energy for the upliftment of others, how can the Vanaprastha Ashram even manifest if we don't value its main contribution? You know, usually we tend to value devotees according to two things, how much service they can do and how much money they can give. And old people, you know, are, according to these two criteria, they're not really valued. They can't run around and do so much service anymore. Body is getting older. And they might not have big money to contribute. But we have not really fully understood that valuable contribution they are giving, giving guidance and shelter and advice to the young generation. And that's why so many devotees, we all run to our sannyasi diksha gurus with our family issues. I had gurus telling me that, you know, 75% of all their energy goes by with advising their disciples with family issues. But that's not their business, actually. That's what the vanaprasthas are meant for. You know, so there's a lot of issues there, you know. 15-hour course. Please come next year. Yes, because see, also once we give that training, then people don't enter married life when they're 45. You know? Yes. That's a clear indication that people don't understand that after the Grihastha Ashram is another ashram. Yes. That's why people get married when they're 45, 48 and start with babies and then they're 60 and they still have to maintain small children. This is the result of that. Yes. And I recently listened to a lecture from one preacher in Chaupati and he was making the statement, to enter the Grihastha Ashram the right mood to enter the Grihastha Ashram is to have a clear understanding how to get out of it. Yes. But who is really entering like that married life with a clear understanding how to move on, how to get out of it? Yeah? Yes. So, I mean, ooh, there's a lot of things to... Okay. Yeah, I guess it's 9 for those who want to leave, can leave. For those who want to ask questions, Prabhuji there wants to ask something. Can somebody give him the mic?
Mataji, I just want to confirm, give my experience. Your course is incredible. I'm from Los Angeles, California. And last year you gave us a 5-day course in LA on the shelter.
Okay, okay.
It was incredibly
yes.
beautiful.
Okay.
I got a lot of information from that course.
Okay.
And your book.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that.
And the other thing about Prabhupada's comments that we touched on, and the Prabhupada makes comments relevant to the existing circumstances. When I listen to his comments on some of the topics, for example, one of the devotees was sharing in the hippie movement, one person wakes up, gets up and asks Prabhupada, have you met God? How is the spiritual process looks like? And then Prabhupada takes a break and says, is an ocean of LSD.
An ocean of?
LSD. LSD, you know.
LSD?
Yeah.
Okay.
That is the time everybody was with the LSD.
Okay.
And then that got their attention. Because it is, and we have to take that into perspective, that make a meaning to our life rather than pointing out Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that. As yes. we grow our spiritual life, it is beautifully we can understand it, what he is making the comments.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Last question over there, huh? Or was there something from the ladies also? Okay, sorry.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Mataji, for such a nice discourse. My question is, given we see when somebody is killed by a lord, he at least he got liberated in Krishna's Leela, and here Ravana is killed by Lord Ramchandra, then how he can be destined to hellish life?
Well, I mean, as we were saying, you know, Ravana was Jayan Vijay. Actually, you know, that's the second birth as demons. So I am not sure what destination, you know, he is really having. But the way I understand it is more that Prabhupada makes this point more in general, that persons who lead a sinful life like Ravana, they are destined to hellish life. It doesn't necessarily mean that now Ravana is really destined. You know, because I read yesterday when I researched a little bit that one statement that actually when Ravana was killed by Ramchandra, he was fixed his mind on the Lord. So externally he looks, you know, sinful because of this curse that he had to take birth in three lifetimes in a demon's body. Because ultimately the Lord wanted to enjoy a good fight, you know. So I don't really think that actually Ravana did go to the hellish planets, because he's actually a devotee, you know. And he was actually fixing his mind on the Lord when he was killed. And he achieved liberation, you know.
So in the purport it is written as just to give the teachings that a devotee should do a shraad ceremony and all, because ultimately yes. Ravana was not destined to hellish life, but the Prabhupada's statement was directly saying that he was destined, and Lord Ramchandra advised Vibhishana to do shraad ceremony so that he can be saved. So we can understand it as a teaching, Mataji, as you are saying.
What to say? I don't know. Did you still want to ask your question? Quickly, let her. Huh? Okay. Okay, thank you so much for your kind interest. Ganta Chimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Swami Vidya Bhaktivinoda Ki. Go up him and Andy, hurry, hurry, hurry.